Benefits Like a Boss.
Welcome to the Benefits Like a Boss podcast, supported by Nonstop Administration and Insurance Services. Nonstop is a mission-driven employee health benefits advisor, and we are committed to building health equity while reducing the cost of health insurance for employers and employees. Visit us at nonstophealth.com.
Welcome to the Benefits Like a Boss podcast. I am your host, Leslie Brown Albright, and I'm going to be flying solo today. So thank you for joining me on this little adventure that I'm about to partake in. We've got an excellent, innovative leader who's going to talk us through some of the challenges of change. I cannot wait to get into this today. Hey, welcome everyone to the show. We have a really special guest here with us, and actually a repeat guest, Cheryl Peterson-Pine, a CFO, yes, but that's not the truest of her passions. Cheryl has spent her career sharpening her change management and team collaboration acumen. She has taken broken departments and turned them into successful, happy teams. She reads many books throughout the year, is an avid learner, and is open to expanding her knowledge and horizons personally and professionally. Cheryl, thank you so much for joining me today on this really amazing conversation about change. I'm so happy to have you back.
Leslie, thank you for having me. I'm happy to be here. I love to talk about change.
Awesome. Awesome. I'm just going to kind of kick us off with one of the probably broadest, most real questions I can think of. Why is change so hard?
Such a good question, Leslie. The simplest answer is because we can't control it. We have absolutely no idea what the outcome is going to be when we enter into it. We think we do, but the thing about change is humans are involved, even if it's just a change for ourselves. We are human. We do have emotions. We do have distractions. We have all these things. So we want to control it. And the other piece I would say is there's a lot of fear involved. When you do big changes at work, fear if this is going to be right for me, fear if I'm going to have a role, fear if I'm going to be good at it. There's all of these things that bring together the human experience. And that's what change management is. It's about helping your humans through the process of change. So too many emotions, too much to think about. And we want it to go a certain way. And we can't plan for every hiccup along the way.
Yeah, I think that's perfectly stated. It can be uncomfortable sometimes and exciting.
It even in the excitement, it becomes uncomfortable. And yes. I say this often that we wear these grooves for ourselves in our comfort zones, right? And it's like a truck trying to get out of the grooves in a driveway. You know, it's really hard. And you keep wanting to come back in to what's comfortable. And often what is comfortable is not always good for us.
Yes.
And it's not always, even in an organizational, right? We need to keep up with the market. We need to keep up with what our employees need. We need to keep up with the industry, all these things, depending on what kind of organization. So our comfort zone is exactly that. It's comfortable, but it's not always best for us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I love that. I love that. So why does the study of change management and leadership matter to you?
Years ago, when I decided to continue my education, I didn't need anybody to really explain to me what finance was and strategy was, because I've been a CFO or a financial leader in an organization for, at that time, more than 2 decades. I wanted to learn about people and leadership. It's about the people. It's not just about the tasks you do. It is about the people. And the reality is, that's what change management is. It's about people. And I had been going through some very significant changes in my life at the time I started digging into it, taking a job up north, and then 2 years later deciding to move home. So it's become very interesting. And no matter how sound and solid the organizations that I go to work for are, there's always something that needs changing.
Yeah.
Right. And you have to be open to what those things are. And it is all about, even if change is something you love, and I have leaders say this all the time, I love change. I think change is great. And that is wonderful for them. But they still have to know how to engage and empower and bring those who are less comfortable with change along with them.
Yes. Yes. I love that. because not everybody is excited and comfortable with change. So
no, and you have to, I think good leaders, depending on how close they are to the change itself, have to be prepared to take the temperature on an ongoing basis and check in with people as they are going through the change. What's working? What's not? Why are you uncomfortable? I get a lot of questions about people that are super resistant and what do we do? And my first thing is, did you ask them why? Because the truth about humans is that we carry with us a generation of baggage, right?
Yeah.
So you can have a change happening at work that triggers something completely unrelated.
Boy, isn't that true? Yeah.
And no matter how self-aware and self-developed we want to think we are, everybody's not. And sometimes you just need to sit down and say, why is this hard for you?
Mm-hmm.
And, or, you know, why I'm sensing resistance. Why are you resisting what could really work for us? So I think that is a missed step. And if you heard the session last week, which I hope folks will listen to the recording, is that communication. And you can't take for granted that the message you deliver at a leadership level is what the front line is hearing.
Mm-hmm.
And you need to check that because there can be many steps on your message as it goes down the path.
No, I love that. And I love that you mentioned the conversation that you led with us at Nonstop, and it was courageous leadership and change management. And it was just such a great conversation. So speaking of that conversation, I'm going to kind of turn the boat just a little bit here, but what is something that you hoped every leader got from that conversation?
Well, communication. The two things, you know, I said lots of things, and there are two key components of which we're going to be following up with some micro sessions on. One of them is how to best support your employees, right? Your workforce during the change.
Mm-hmm.
And the other is about communication. So those are two important. I was actually at a conference once and someone came up to me and said, so let me get this right. To communicate. And then I communicate and then I communicate again. And all I could say was yes.
Yes.
Right?
Yeah.
Yeah. Communicate. It's most under missed. And most of the questions I receive from people, the first thing I said was, have you spoken to the team about this? Or have you engaged with them? Have you communicated with them? Can you ask this question? So I think it's really important, the communication piece.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, I think, didn't you say something about like, once you start to get annoyed with yourself saying it, then that's when you know that the message is getting out there.
That's actually one of my favorite authors, Adam Grant, did say that by the time you are tiring of your message, it is just starting to land. And you have to remember, we've been thinking about it for a long time. By the time we roll out some significant change management initiative, right? Some big project we're going to do.
Yep.
We've been talking about it forever. So by the time we're engaging with the staff on down to the front line, we're like, I've been talking about this for months, sometimes years, right?
Yeah.
But we can't assume that everybody hears everything that we've said on the topic. So
for sure.
Absolutely.
I love that statement. When you said that, I was like, ooh, I love this one.
Uh-huh.
And I love Adam Grant. I mean, great voice out in the leadership world.
Absolutely.
Okay. So change management, as we're kind of just talking through this, it applies to different business decisions and also real life decisions. But I'm going to turn it just a little bit here to something specific and ask you, why do you think this conversation is particularly important when we're applying it to employee health benefits?
It's actually very similar. Again, I urge everybody to listen to the session, but I want to point out, we talked about it at length because it is a complex business decision. Your workplace well-being, all the components that support a well workforce are important. And one of those is health equity.
Yeah.
And making sure that what is good for, it's good for the many, not just the few. And we cannot, especially in leadership, you know, we cannot make assumptions about what our people need. We need to dig down and find out from our people what they need. Sometimes we can solve problems again, just by having that communication and having that engagement of what are you looking for and what it is you need for your family. because what is very important to me as a not young person may be incredibly important to somebody who has small children at home, right? So I can't assume that what I need is what they need. Mm-hmm. And I think we often get lost in a few pieces of input as opposed to everyone's input. And I would also say that it is one of the singular decisions that you will make that impacts every single person that works for you. And in a day-to-day life way.
Yeah.
So what you do or don't offer has a significant impact on how they will, how your employees not just will be cared for on their own and, you know, in their home life, but also how they will view you as their employer for what you are providing. Yeah. So you have this opportunity, and I think we forget that there's lots of experts out there, lots of people, lots of resources, and it can seem incredibly complex and incredibly daunting. But the great part about the world as it is today is there are lots of subject matter experts in these things mm-hmm. that we need help on. And I don't think we should assume that we have to do things like that on our own, nor do I think we should take what's always been as the answer. I think we have to make sure. There's lots of new ways to do lots of different things. And I think when we rest on anything that has to do with our workforce, especially their well-being, then we stand to cost our organizations incredible amounts of money.
Yeah.
And just in the way it impacts the way our teams work all day, every day.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it goes beyond the walls of work.
It is one of the few things that happens. I mean, I have a favorite saying, which I've been quoted to, how we interact with our employees on a day-to-day basis impacts how they go home to partner and parent. Well, the benefits, whether that be health insurance, dental vision, whether that be PTO, time off, flex schedules, all that impacts how they go home to partner and parent. And it goes beyond just wages. It's all of those mm-hmm. things that wrap around the employee.
Yeah. You know, I love that statement. I love when you say it. So it's so true. I mean, it's just so true. I mean, I love your lens too, because you talk about this in a financial way, because we often know this is like the second largest spend for an organization, but this really, really is an opportunity for people.
That is.
And it's just so important.
We have a responsibility to the people that work for us. We cannot, as leaders, continue to complain that there's a workforce problem or turnover's too high or we can't find the right people when we are not taking the time at some point in that process to say, mm-hmm. are we providing everything our employees need or our employees want from us?
Yeah.
And that's all those pieces. I mean, I think culture and caring for the people that work for you is incredibly important.
Yeah. Yeah. And it just makes me think about getting out of that comfort rut that you were talking about. So getting away from that status quo, exploring something new, being open, you know, I could go on and on.
Oh, for years, I had people show up and say, okay, it's that time of year. Here's your 8%. Here's your 12%. Here's your 15% increase with absolutely no initiative to make any changes about that. So I think as employers, we need to say, wait a minute, is this really it? Is this really the best I got? And ask hard questions of those people who are our business partners.
Yeah, that's what they're there for. So it's great.
Absolutely.
Okay. So continuing to dig into the conversation a little bit deeper, let's just pretend a leader has identified some type of change, whether it's employee health benefits, they've got a new payroll system, they're facing something that they have to move into the action phase. So I want to ask you some of your maybe bonus key takeaways that you might have time to share with us today that you didn't have time to share on the live event.
First of all, there's this, whatever this thing is that we're initiating, have we taken the time to actually go to where the change is going to happen? Have we actually engaged with those that are closest to the work or closest to the change? Mm-hmm. No change should happen in a conference room with a bunch of people sitting around a table.
Yeah.
you can establish it and you can theorize about what it will look like. But if you have not gone to where the change is going to happen in lean, they call that a Gemba walk. Get in there and find out what's actually happening.
Mm-hmm.
I think we set ourselves up for failure when we make too many assumptions. You've heard me speak before. You know, I'm a big fan of the four agreements. And one of the four agreements is not to make assumptions. One of the other four agreements is to not take things personally. And I think there are times when we've made this decision as leaders. And when people don't agree with us, we take it very personally. And don't you see that this is for the betterment of everyone or the organization or the employees or however you want, whatever that change is. But if we have not taken the time to engage properly and get feedback, you know, feedback's critical in any change. And I have been guilty of this. You know, you think you're just going to change this one little thing and it has a ripple effect that you were not planning for.
Yeah.
Now I honor the unintended consequences, right? Mm-hmm. I will seek out what might happen. And I'm a big fan of the pilot program to make sure that, you know, we pilot it first before we do too much disruption. You can't always do that, obviously. But I do think planning and actually having a full understanding. And I think we forget that we have many, many experts within our organizations that are able to provide us information that we could never know because they're closest to the work or closest to the people.
Yeah. I mean, it's like lived experience too, I guess. Right. And they're doing the work. I mean, yeah.
That is exactly true.
Great. Okay. I have a weird question for you.
Can't wait.
Is it ever okay to pause change or maybe reevaluate or even postpone your change initiative? Is that ever an okay thing for leaders to do?
That is a huge question. It all depends on the change. And it, of course, it depends on the investment. So if you heard what I said just previously, have the plan, get the input, get the feedback. However, when we can build milestones and opportunities to reflect on the change, there will be opportunities to course correct.
Yeah.
Rarely does a change, depending on how big it is, go easily and go simply. The hardest part is right in the middle and you think it's just horrible. And then all of a sudden things start to work out. Depending on your financial investment, say it's a new software program. No, you can't stop right in the middle, but you might find, and this often happens, another person I love to quote about change are the Heath brothers that wrote Switch and another of my favorite books. And they talk about what looks like a people problem is often a situational problem. And so what we don't realize is that when things were broken, our people worked around it. They created these workarounds, and then it becomes, you know, 20 steps to get to from point A to point B. And it can even be, this can even come up since you brought up health benefits. I hate changing providers. I might not love my provider, but they do pretty well. And it's just a thing. I hate changing providers. Well, some people have created these workarounds with the people that they go to for their care, right? So that is a disruption. But again, back to should you pause it? No, sometimes you have to ask more questions. I think if it's planned well, you don't have to actually pause, but you certainly need to take time to reflect so that you are sure that you are going on the path. And at this point, I also want to point out when you have those milestones and things are going well, then those need to be celebrated.
Oh, I like that.
Because there are going to be people that said this was never going to work.
Yep.
Or were resistant to it. And it sends the message that it's working and we're heading in the right direction. It also rewards that work that so many people have been putting into the change to begin with. Because there's nothing worse than those people that are working so hard and doing the heavy lift and collaborating with their team members and nobody notices. Right. All of a sudden, it's crickets. So would I pause? No, But I do think you need to analyze what's actually going on and be thoughtful about it and ask questions. Yeah. Again, make as few assumptions as possible.
That's great. So have like a good plan. And I love the fact that you said celebrate the victories that you kind of, or the milestones that you hit, because I do think they're really important. These people are investing time.
Yep.
Blood, sweat, and tears sometimes.
Yep.
Into changes.
Yep.
And so we should acknowledge our people as we move along. So thank you for bringing that up. I love that. Okay, so we've talked about how important communication is already, but I want to talk about it again because remember, we're supposed to keep talking about it. So it really, really sinks into people. So can you share why communication is so important in the process? I kind of really want to know, when you're talking about this, what do you do with those naysayers?
A couple of things there. First of all, I think communication is important because we don't do enough of it. And for as much as humans like to talk, they're not always talking about the right things. And there is a pivotal period in the beginning of a change initiative when you need to communicate just to shop around your idea, right? Like, I think this would be a really great idea, right? One of the best practices is to have a sponsor. So some of that communication is even looking for someone who has perhaps more influence or than you do.
Yeah. Yep.
Using human resources as an example, not every organization has a CHRO. Sometimes they are down a couple levels, like on a director level, right? So
sure, yep.
If they want to inspire a change, they need to engage and shop things around. When I speak a lot about the growth mindset versus the fixed mindset. And I think naysayers tend to be often in the fixed mindset. Don't want to change it. Don't want to learn something new. Don't want to risk. Don't want to be wrong. All of these things. And the reality is, again, asking the question of like, why are you so resistant to this?
Mm-hmm.
And often I have found that there are those that are going to say no, just because. I mean, a lot of what we do in our organizations can also be political, right? So you have to understand, having those conversations where you are seeking to understand, if you will, as Stephen Covey put it, to understand exactly what is going on. And the hashtag I use lots of times is lean in to win, as it relates to change management, because what often happens is those naysayers are leaning out and you want them to lean in and get the information.
Mm-hmm.
And I think this is actually why we're going to have an additional micro session, which may not be so micro by the time it's finished, on communication, because influence and getting buy-in, those are all key parts of the change. And even depending on who you are in your organization, there comes a point where the naysayers can be the naysayers and you have to charge forward anyway, because you're doing what you know is right or what the organization needs.
Yeah, absolutely. I totally agree with that. And my frustration is finding people that they're going to naysay no matter what, or they put up barriers.
Yes.
And I don't understand why sometimes. It's so frustrating, you know, when you think the team's moving in a good direction, you get this barrier put up, you've got something new you're implementing. And it can be a real challenge for the team at large, I would say.
It's interesting you mentioned that. A couple of the questions that I did receive from the viewers were about this topic, where someone has become an active barrier to the success. And I have had that situation, and I have had where I have had to engage and ask why. Again, people bring their baggage into their changes, right? Mm-hmm. It can be a crisis of confidence. And also, depending on the level of the employee, I have found, you know me, Leslie, and you know another one of my sayings is that people are more than the clicks that they do.
Yes.
But when people are very, I'm used to doing a certain amount of clicks, and that's how they know how productive they are. When you are able to streamline or automate some of those processes, and they are actually able to be thoughtful employees and think about, you know, engage their critical thinking skills, those are things that are more difficult to measure. And not everyone is comfortable with that.
Yeah.
Some people are very task driven and they know that's how they're measured. So being able to let people know, training will be provided. We will be able to engage with you. We will be able to understand why these things are happening. And not everyone, this is the other part, not everyone will be successful in the change.
Sure.
Then, you know, you have other changes that you have to discuss as part of the process.
Yeah, yeah.
But it is a reality that people, and I would say fear and insecurity drives a lot of that, become very, they create huge barriers to other people's success. And sometimes it even gets into a sabotage situation. And you have to be mindful of that and know what the purpose of the change is and that we're heading in the right direction. Again, the many versus the few.
Yes. Yep. I like kind of driving that home because it can be that squeaky wheel situation. But really what we're trying to do is move things forward for the health of the team.
Yep.
And sometimes that just doesn't include a few people. We know whatever that looks like, whether it's changing their minds or transitionings or whatever it is. But
yeah, all of that's very true.
Yeah. So we've hit some pretty good key components, I think. And I want to kind of ask now something about like the success of the change. So what are the absolute non-negotiables to implement successful change from inspiring the team to implementation?
Well, because I don't want to keep saying the same words over again. I'm going to pick a different thing. Knowing exactly where you are, what is the current reality? Sometimes we think we know, but we haven't made sure we know what the current reality actually is. I've even seen this, like when we were going to change with something and we get some pro forma, this is what it's going to cost you with this new change, but it's not really applied to to exactly what we have. So it doesn't really translate. And then you get the first invoice. Mm-hmm. You're like, that is not what I thought we were doing here.
Yeah.
And it's theoretical, but you need to really know, you need to start in reality and you need to have a firm understanding of what that is.
Yeah.
People love to tell you what they're saving you and all these great positive impacts. But if you can't measure it down the road to really see where you were on day one before the change or day 100 before day zero, you really can't measure it properly. So you need to set yourself up to be able to then measure it. The other piece, and this kind of comes near the end, but it's something you have to be thinking about at the beginning, is how are you going to sustain it?
Oh, yes.
You know, a lot of initiatives, it's like, oh, here's our new culture program. Here's all these things, but
yes,
it has not been institutionalized so that it becomes part of who the organization is.
Yeah.
And this can even be a workflow thing. Somebody forgets that somebody has to document the workflows. And then somebody's going to, you know, if you're a large organization, like I work in healthcare, we have a business informatics team that they come in to actually measure the things everybody else is doing. So somebody has to measure it to know that it was successful in some way. If it's going to improve efficiency, did it? If it's going to shorten cycle time, did it? If it's going to reduce turnover, did it?
Did it?
Right? So we need to be able to measure things. And I think we forget about what happens when the actual change is over.
Yes.
Then what happens? And how do all those pieces continue to move forward?
I am so obsessed that you just talked about that, because it is absolutely was literally like in my brain that I didn't even think about what happens afterwards. But you have to.
Yes. And when you're planning the change, you have, as part of the communication, a leader has to be able to say, this is my vision, or whoever's the leader of the change. It may not be the leader of the organization, sure, but it's your person that has the sponsor that's helping drive this through the team or the organization. And so somebody has to be able to say, this is the change, this is what it's solving, and this is what it will look like when we get there. Now, again, you've built in your incremental steps, so things may happen along the way that change a little bit of how you get there, but the vision of what you're trying to accomplish should be the same. So, you know, if it's patient care delivery and that the goal is to, you know, create more wraparound services for your patients in a way that's more useful for them. Okay, if that's where you're going, how are we going to get there? But that's still where you're going. So if we lose sight of where you're going, you have to be able you can't just put everything in place and say, okay, well, now we're done.
Yeah.
And it
congratulations to us.
I mean, I've worked for people who said, I think we did that change already. And I'm like, did you? Did you finish it? Was it talked about? Well, I don't know. We talked about it for a long time. And I'm sure something happened, but nobody could tell me what happened. So,
yeah, the measurement of it.
This too happens. People call it change fatigue. I had somebody ask me a question like, what about when, you know, we just keep talking about all these changes. I said, okay, you're talking about all of them, but are any of them really happening? Did you implement anything? Or have you been talking about it for 3 years and nothing's ever happened and nothing's ever changed?
Yeah, which we know that happens too.
Or did you hire somebody that was going to do that thing? And then you're like, okay, I checked the box. I hired the right person that's going to oversee that important program. And then no other resources were ever provided to that program, right? So, and we see that in employee wellness. We see that in justice, equity, diversity, and inclusion. We see it in all of those areas where we somehow checked a box, but we haven't made sure that it's become part of who we are.
Yeah, it's not like woven into the fabric of your organization, or like a leader's taken the hand off the wheel and then you're just hoping it's going well, not really checking in and measuring. So,
yes.
All right, Cheryl. So for you, what is something like a change that you've led that you're really, really proud of?
Earlier in my career, what I enjoyed most about it was that it engaged all sorts of different levels of employees, but it was really to transform how we did a certain work function within the organization. Mm-hmm. And what that is, isn't specific. I mean, it doesn't need to be specific, but it was the way we followed the lean format, which of Lean Six Sigma. And our goal was to eliminate a waste, and the waste was time. And, you know, you engage different individuals and including someone who knows nothing about the process, which was me. And so I got to learn about this particular process, which I knew was a problem. I just didn't know why it was a problem.
Sure.
And so I got to learn firsthand and see how that went. And it was when I saw people going, I had no idea this was going to make our job so much easier. And to see, you know, just like the relief that comes over people, you know, when they're like, oh, now I get it. And then you have new experts on the topic and new people that are kind of invigorated because they were able to see a change that impacted their work every day, I think is really, really meaningful.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah.
Well, we've kind of come to the end of our conversation, and I just really appreciate you ending on that personal note, because I'm always curious to hear about people's own personal experiences, because we learn from each other and different things resonate with different leaders. And so as we all continue to communicate and share, we get to learn from each other. So as always, this has just been a really productive and insightful show, Cheryl. So thank you for giving us your time, sharing your expertise, and also for being with the audience again.
I am thrilled to be here. Always love chatting with you, Leslie. You know that.
Yeah, you too. You too. Well, I want to encourage everyone that's listening today to please connect with Cheryl. You know, you can find some inspiration for your own practice as a leader, and you can reach out to her at cherylpine.com, or you can connect with her on LinkedIn, or you can follow her on Instagram at Cheryl Peterson Pine. So please, please, please connect. I know Cheryl does a lot of inspiration. She has a lot of inspiring quotes sharing each day, each week. And there's lots of takeaways that I really personally love to read and kind of help me take a moment just to reflect. So I appreciate you doing those for everyone.
Thank you.
Okay, Cheryl. So you know the score. We like to end our show on this rapid fire question situation. Are you still game to do that?
Sure.
Okay, fun. I love doing these. All right. So your first question is, what is one value in life you cannot compromise on?
Integrity.
Where is your favorite place to travel?
I just went to Europe for the first time, but I would say I actually love traveling across the US. I think there are so many different places to see. And I saw Kentucky and Tennessee for the first time this year. And I thought it was spectacular to go through the Kentucky Blue Mountains. It was just spectacular.
That's fun. Cheryl, what does the world need more of?
Open minds.
Awesome. Well, Cheryl, thank you again. And thank you to all of our listeners who joined us today. And I don't want anyone to worry. We are definitely going to link up Cheryl's presentation in the show notes. So you can go back and listen to the recording. And then again, please reach out to Cheryl. You can ask her questions. She's happy to engage.
Yep.
Yeah, Cheryl, thank you again for your time.
Thanks, Leslie. I appreciate it. Thank you.
Benefits like a boss.
Today's episode was supported by Nonstop Administration and Insurance Services. Nonstop believes that healthcare should be affordable and accessible. If employee health benefits are a workforce or financial challenge for your organization, visit us at nonstophealth.com.